The median price for a home is at an all-time high. Rent prices are also at record highs, and homelessness is rising at an upsetting rate. So why aren't we building more places for people to live? Atlantic staff writer Derek Thompson joins us to explain why the housing crisis is so complicated to solve, and he joins us by Skype. Hi there, Derek.
Great to be here.
I know this is complex, but let's try to get through the issues that contribute to these higher prices one by one. First, you have the pandemic that triggered this supply chain bottleneck. That's raising the cost of all the goods associated with homes. And then the Great Resignation meant millions of people left their jobs. How does that impact the cost of housing?
I think it's a good place to start. There are both short-term reasons why houses are very expensive to build, and there are longer-term reasons why houses are expensive to build. So you look at some of the short-term reasons, like, say, the cost of lumber was really expensive for a while. There's a labor shortage. There's less immigration to the U.S., and construction tends to be a disproportionately immigration-high market. So those are some short-term reasons. But what I also want to do here in this piece is to look at some of the longer-term reasons why, not just over the last 18 months, but over the last 22 years, this entire century, we've done a pretty pitiful job of building enough houses across the country. And that sort of forces us to look, you know, more structurally at the reasons.
Then there are zoning regulations that vary from city to city and county to county and state to state. You say that they are historically overwrought, that many of these regulations are needed, but slow everything down. How does that contribute?
Yeah, so this is the second big piece that I look at. If the first piece is parts and labor, right? You need wood to build a house. You need construction workers to build the house. Well, you also need permission. You need to overcome certain rules. And right now, the U.S. just has an extraordinary thicket of rules. You have building code requirements and zoning rules. You have historic preservation rules. There are rules about if you build a multi-story residential apartment building, there are parking requirements. There's development fees. There are all of these things that you have to do in addition to just erecting the wood and the steel and building the rooms. And those rules, I think, are a huge, huge part of why building a house in the U.S. takes such a long time to get all the permits, but also why it's so financially onerous for developers.
Okay, so we've got short-term things like higher price of goods and labor. Then you've got the rules, that's longer term. And then you have the NIMBY crowd, the not in my backyard, which is citizens themselves who use existing laws to prevent or really slow down construction. You call it the local vetocracy.
Local vetocracy. So this is borrowing from Francis Fukuyama, a political scientist term, vetocracy. That is rule by veto. Right now, you could argue that Congress itself is a vetocracy, rule by veto. But in local housing markets, a lot of time, there was a lot of laws in the books, especially environmental laws, that allow single individuals to hold up complicated new developments. They can say, you know, I think a new apartment building in a city that needs lots of new apartments, I don't think it passes muster under environmental regulations. And they can force a developer to go to court for years and spend hundreds of thousands of dollars trying to do all of these environmental impact reviews and show that it passes muster. There's all sorts of ways in which the U.S. has essentially, at many local levels, decided that we want individual litigious people's voices to be heard from. And at scale, what this does essentially is it blocks a lot of housing, it blocks a lot of affordable housing from being built, and it altogether reduces the amount of houses in the U.S.
I mean, I have to get to how this fits into your longer range reporting on why we need an abundance agenda. Mm-hmm. And you basically make the argument that all of the other things you've written and reported about are all somehow connected to housing. What do you mean?
Absolutely. This is sometimes called the housing theory of everything. Let's say that you care about climate change. Well, if you don't build enough homes near cities, that pushes people out to the suburbs where their carbon footprint is higher. Let's say what you really care about is America's declining fertility or declining population. Well, the cost of housing discourages families from having as many kids as they like. We know this from surveys. Let's say you're just interested in, I don't know, obesity, right? That doesn't seem to have anything to do with housing, except when you build a lot of houses, not near cities, but rather in the suburbs, that means, especially before remote work, that you had especially long commutes in the US. Well, long commutes mean that people are sitting down for a long time during the day rather than walking around. That could lead to things like higher obesity. So I'm very interested in looking at all the various ways that our refusal to build sufficient housing cashes out in scarcity across the board.
There's also a number of suggestions from you on how to solve this, as always, we can take a look at it in The Atlantic. Derek Thompson is a staff writer for The Atlantic. And Derek, as always, thank you so much.
Thank you.